The Economist magazine for May 16th through May 22nd, 2026. Business section continued on page 60. Reliance Industries. Ambani's gamble. Mumbai. The boss of Reliance wants to transform his conglomerate into a tech giant. In the coming months, Reliance Industries, an Indian corporate colossus, will spin off Jio Platforms, its telecoms arm, in what is set to be the largest initial public offering in its country's history. The flotation, expected to value Jio at $130 billion to $150 billion and raise around $3.5 billion, comes after a decade of huge capital-intensive bets that have turned Reliance from an oil and chemicals company into a business empire woven into much of the life of India. Even by the standards of the country's sprawling conglomerates, it is immense. Only the Tata Group, made up of a network of 26 listed businesses, is more valuable. Reliance, which is worth some $200 billion, runs the world's biggest oil refinery, with roughly 1.5% of global processing capacity. It also accounts for around a third of India's natural gas production. Jio, in which it will maintain a majority stake, is the world's second biggest mobile operator, measured by number of users, and runs the second biggest streaming platform as well. Reliance's retail business, which spans formats from neighborhood grocery shops to large stores peddling clothes and gadgets, is among the world's five biggest by store count and the largest in the home country. But Mukesh Ambani, the conglomerate's boss, is not done yet. Already, he is on to his next big gamble, this time on artificial intelligence. With enormous investments planned both in infrastructure and software. Meanwhile, investors are beginning to ask what happens after Mr. Ambani, who is 69, steps aside. Whether he pulls off the next transformation of Reliance will matter not just to the company's shareholders, but to India's economy too. It would not be Reliance's first reinvention. Founded in Mumbai in the 1950s by Dhirubhai Ambani, Mukesh's father, it began as a small commodities trader, dealing first in spices and polyester yarn before opening a textile mill. Over the following decades, it moved into petrochemicals, refining, and oil and gas production. Mr. Ambani, who took over in 2002 after his father's sudden death, has developed his own distinctive method for entering new markets. Spend lavishly to build first-rate infrastructure. Subsidize costs to acquire customers and sit on losses while rivals bleed. When it launched Jio in 2016, India's mobile industry was fragmented, with more than 10 operators. Smartphones were not yet widespread. Data was expensive, and most users relied on voice services. Jio upended the market by offering free data for months and sharply lower prices thereafter. It also bundled in live television, films, music, and cloud storage at little or no extra cost. The result was a bloodbath. Bernstein, a broker, estimates that the mobile data prices in India fell by 95% between 2016 and 2019. By then, the industry had shrunk to three main providers, and Jio's subscriber base had surged from nothing to more than 370 million. Since Jio's launch, Reliance has poured more than $50 billion into telecoms infrastructure. It now commands over 45% of the market. Mr. Ambani's took a similar approach to retail. Although the conglomerate began dabbling in the industry in 2006, its efforts began in earnest in the years after its entry into the telecoms business. Since March 2017, Reliance has spent more than $21 billion building a nationwide network of stores, increasing their number roughly sixfold to over 19,000. In 2020, it sold a stake in the retail division to investors, including General Atlantic, an American venture capital firm, and Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund, a sovereign wealth vehicle. Since 2021, Reliance has been building a renewable energy business. In Jamnagar, a city in the western state of Gujarat, the group is building gigafactories to make solar panels, batteries, green hydrogen equipment, and more. The output will supply a solar park in an arid tract north of Jamnagar that stretches over 550,000 acres, roughly three times the size of Singapore. Reliance has already pledged to invest around $10 billion of capital in clean energy. That may prove to be only the start. India remains hungry for power and is reliant on fossil fuels. Mr. Ambani's willingness to place capital-intensive bets has reshaped the group. A decade ago, oil and gas production, refining, and petrochemicals accounted for nearly all Reliance's operating profit. They now make up less than half, see chart. Huge investments mean that the group's return on capital is modest, at less than 8% a year over the past decade, well below its cost of capital. Yet investors have been indulgent. As one fund manager puts it, most would rather see Mr. Ambani reinvest the cash than return it. Their confidence is now being tested by Reliance's biggest bet yet, this time on AI. Mr. Ambani's conglomerate has been edging into the field over the past few years. In September 2023, for example, it unveiled a partnership with NVIDIA, a chip titan, to build an AI model trained on Indian languages. But the effort has been gathering pace since last August, with the launch of Reliance Intelligence, an AI-focused subsidiary. Meta, an American social media giant, took a stake of roughly one-third in the business in December. In February, Reliance announced that it would splurge $110 billion on data centers over the next 7 years. In Jamnagar, it is already in the process of building one that it says will eventually have a capacity of several gigawatts. 120 megawatts are due to come online later this year. Reliance's ambition is to make AI cheap and accessible for India's masses, just as Jio did with mobile data. A partnership with Google gives eligible Jio subscribers 18 months of the American Search Giant's premium AI plan at no cost. Reliance also hopes to sell AI tools to Indian businesses. As before, it is betting that scale comes first and profits later. This time, however, may be harder. One reason is timing. The surge in oil prices caused by the war in the Gulf is a problem for Reliance's refining and petrochemicals businesses, which depend on imports of the fuel and remain important sources of cash flow for the group. The deeper question is whether the conglomerate can become more than just an infrastructure provider in AI. Retail offers a cautionary tale. The group has been far more successful at rapidly building a store network than it has at developing shopping apps to compete with rivals, including India's booming quick commerce industry. Jio's success has likewise rested mostly on Reliance's ability to erect telecoms infrastructure quickly. Its streaming operation owes its scale to a merger with Hotstar, previously owned by Disney, an American entertainment firm. Mr. Ambani talks of transforming his conglomerate into a technology company. That vision is a long way off. A venture capitalist in Bangalore reckons it will struggle to attract top developers to its AI venture. The hierarchical management that suits refineries, retail chains, and telecoms operations may be less suitable for activities that depend on scarce talent and a tolerance for failure. Ambani Intelligence. The longer-term worry is that what happens after Mr. Ambani retires? His father's death resulted in a public feud between Mukesh and his brother Anil, which split the empire in two. Anil's half, including a power utility, a financial service business, and an earlier telecoms operation, has floundered. This time, Mukesh Ambani has been more careful. In 2023, he handed each of his children a domain. Akash was given telecoms, Isha retail, and Anant renewable energy. Sugata Ray, a professor at the Indian School of Business, says that although a clear structure is in place, the real test will come only when Mr. Ambani's children have to operate independently, without guidance from their father. Despite its size, insiders say the Reliance's big decisions still pass through Mr. Ambani. Whether his children share his knack for pulling off big bets remains unclear. Mr. Ambani has also cultivated strong ties with India's politicians, a vital asset, and one that may not transfer to his offspring. For now, though, Mr. Ambani is still in charge, and as long as he is, investors seem willing to believe that one more giant wager will pay off. Business continues on page 61. The consequences of war. Fed up. Washington, D.C. America is headed for another grocery price shock. Americans are not famous for their love of vegetables. The staple of American cuisine are starchy, cheesy, and heavy on meat. One exception, though, sneaks into everything. The tomato. Slices are tucked into burgers. Canned ones become pizza sauce. Further processing turns them into ketchup. after potatoes. Americans eat more tomatoes than any other vegetable. Yet, shoppers reaching for one at their grocery store may be experiencing a sense of deja vu. Tomato prices are almost 25% higher than they were a year ago. It is eggs all over again. Tomato prices are rising for idiosyncratic reasons. Some 90% of Americans imports of tomatoes come from Mexico. In the middle of 2025, Donald Trump withdrew the tomato suspension agreement, a bilateral arrangement managing imports of Mexican tomatoes, and imposed a 17% levy on them. But prices may keep climbing. Tomatoes, like other fresh produce, require fertilizer, the price of which has rocketed since the war with Iran broke out. Fuel costs are also starting to bite. How bad could the rise in grocery prices get? To understand how energy shock will affect grocery bills, consider each step of the supply chain. Begin with farmers, who rely on fossil fuels. Fertilizers, which typically use natural gas as a feedstock, account for as much as 40% of their input costs. Add to that the diesel needed to fuel their tractors. Producers of commodities like wheat and maize, however, have little control over their prices, which are determined by the balance of global supply and demand. Much of the expense for this year's growing season, rent, equipment, seeds, and even some fertilizer purchases, would have already incurred by the time the war began. The energy shock might force some farmers into the red this year, but many will still make more money by planting what seeds they have rather than letting them go to waste. That means crop supply may not change much this season. The effect on farm prices might, therefore, not be felt in full until next season. But when growers who suffered big losses this year may have packed it in. Next in the grocery supply chain is processing, at least for products like maize, destined for cereal, and cattle fated to become minced meat. Here, markets tend to be more concentrated. There are just four major meatpacking firms and a handful of processed food giants, among them Kraft and General Mills. Yet, there are two reasons not to expect the energy shock to lead these companies to raise prices significantly. The first is they rely less on oil for energy and more on electricity and natural gas, the prices which have risen much more slowly in America. The second is that processed food producers jacked up prices during the post-pandemic wave of inflation, resulting in a loss of customers to new entrants and retailers' in-house brands. Meatpackers have also had to pass on higher beef prices, the result of a cattle shortage following a drought. At least for now, the biggest pressure on American grocery prices, as a consequence of the Iran war, may come from the next two stages of the supply chain: packaging and transport. A good deal of food packaging is made from plastic, from oil. Eggs are now around $2. Here, the greatest impact will be seen not on the food shelves, but in the home care and beauty aisles, stacked with products packaged in thin plastic. Grocery store shampoo prices were up by about 10% year-on-year at the end of March, according to Nielsen IQ, a data provider. Then there's transport, which accounts for a sixth of the food supply chain's total energy consumption, but perhaps as much as half of its requirement for oil. According to the Department of Agriculture, 80 to 90% of America's produce is transported on lorries. Costs are highest for foods like meat and dairy that must be kept refrigerated. With the price of diesel having soared, simply getting food into store shelves has become materially more expensive. Supermarkets, which tend to add only a small markup, usually pass on higher costs to shoppers. The result, then, is likely to be rising grocery bills, perhaps for some time. On May 12th, data was released for April's Consumer Price Index. The prices of fruit and vegetable climbed by 6% year-on-year, though mercifully those of dairy products and eggs did not rise any further. Still, as consumers are painfully aware, food prices are already a third higher than they were before the pandemic. Mr. Trump will look for anyone but himself to blame. It is hard to think of a force that turns people against incumbent politicians more than anxiety at the food supermarket, something that the president, who campaigned on bringing grocery prices down, knows all too well. Already he is pointing the finger at fertilizer producers and meat packers, both of which have been the subject of antitrust investigations by the Department of Justice. Americans may find it hard to stomach his excuses. Business continues on page 62. Cybersecurity, mythos and reality. Los Angeles. The war between businesses and hackers enters a dangerous new phase. Cybersecurity in the age of artificial intelligence in some ways resembles modern warfare. It is asymmetric. Small band of attackers armed with the latest technology can penetrate the most powerful defenses. And the weaponry is increasingly autonomous. As Nikesh Arora, boss of Palo Alto Networks, PAN, a big cybersecurity firm, puts it, AI has to fight AI. Good guys do not always win. In recent weeks, Anthropic and OpenAI have unveiled AI models. Mythos Preview and 5.5-Cyber, respectively. So capable of penetrating weak spots in cyber defenses that the AI labs have released them only to trusted firms. But that is no guarantee of safety. New models are emerging all the time, and hackers already use various varieties. Moreover, as Mr. Arora says, it is not a fair fight. With AI, lone wolves can carry out attacks that used to require whole teams, and they have to be right just once to succeed. Defenders, by contrast, have to be right every time. That is why cybersecurity firms, as well as businesses at large, are scrambling to prepare for a wave of AI-powered cybercrime. Within the industry, PAN and leading rivals such as CrowdStrike have formed alliances to try to make deployment of the latest models safer. Among their customers, the immediate reaction to models like Mythos and 5.5-Cyber was one of panic and freakout, says Adam Myers of CrowdStrike. But the model's appearance was also a wake-up call. Assessments of cyber readiness are moving from IT departments to C-suites and boardrooms. For the time being, these are more likely to be pessimistic than optimistic. The worst news is that however tightly AI labs limit access to their most hazardous creations, criminals will catch up. Soon after Anthropic unveiled Mythos, OpenAI produced its own 5.5 series that, according to the British government, AI Security Institute, may be even stronger. Many expect other model makers, such as open source or Chinese outfits, to quickly develop the long-term reasoning and other capabilities that make Mythos and 5.5-Cyber so effective. The genie is out of the bottle. Even before the new models were released, older ones were enabling hackers to intrude faster and more frequently. CrowdStrike has said that the AI-enhanced attacks rose by 89% in 2025 from the year before. Pan found that equipped with AI, the fastest quartile of attackers were able to steal data from a software system they had broken into just over an hour last year, down from almost five in 2024. A typical firm must take days to detect a breach. The rise of autonomous AI agents that can handle multiple tasks on their own further increases the risks. As Mr. Arora says, hackers can use agentic tools to be even more menacing. And the more firms adopt agents for coding, customer service, and so on, the bigger the area for hackers to attack. In anticipation of this, late last month, Pan said it would acquire PortKey, a firm that helps manage and protect AI agents. Firms are building more software than ever, so we are exposing ourselves more, says Jeremy Dehoney of Gartner, an IT consultancy. Already, companies are overstretched as they try to patch the bugs that AI tools are helping to reveal. Security flaws are tagged as common vulnerabilities and exposures, CVEs, which are made known either to the firms that make the software or to specialized organizations. The number of CVEs reported has been surging recently. See chart. Mr. Myers of CrowdStrike says some speculate that the annual figure could soon reach tenfold to 480,000 as more powerful AI models detect even more bugs. The assumption is that AI will find vulnerabilities faster than patches can be written, says Eric Nost of Forrester, another consultancy. The good news is that though AI is arming attackers, it is also aiding the defenders. Some businesses considered especially critical to the infrastructure of the internet, such as hyperscalers and cybersecurity firms, have gained access to the unlimited release Mythos and 5.5-Cyber models of Anthropic and OpenAI, respectively, to test their own systems. The two AI labs also have lower tiers for members whose members are given access to models that are slightly less permissive than Mythos and 5.5-Cyber, but have more cyber capabilities than those on general release. The recipients are akin to pandemic-era key workers receiving early doses of vaccines. Mozilla, creator of Firefox, a web browser, recently offered an optimistic example. An early version of Mythos helped it identify 271 vulnerabilities in a new iteration of Firefox. It said the model was capable of identifying every bug that a human could, which was not possible only a few months ago. This helped level the playing field against attackers. Defenders finally have a chance to win decisively, it said in a blog post. But it is not just the enhanced capabilities of the cutting-edge models that are assisting defenders. Cybersecurity firms are also developing their own tools, which they call harnesses, to make models more effective. On May 12th, Cisco, an IT giant with access to both Mythos and 5.5-Cyber, said it would make available an open-source, step-by-step guide to creating cybersecurity harnesses to help firms use any model to boost their defenses. There are widespread hopes that the industry can rise to the challenge of AI if it gets its act together. Anthropic and OpenAI have won widespread plaudits for leading a collaborative approach. But although Mr. Arora gives them A+ for intent, Pan's boss reckons neither the labs nor the cybersecurity industry deserves more than a B+ for execution. That is partly because AI threats are still so new that everyone is learning as they go. There's no magic bullet. There's no panacea. We don't know what the right answer is yet. Music to the ears of hackers, no doubt. Business, continued on page 63. Samsung Electronics, up memory lane. Singapore. South Korea's most valuable company has staged a stunning comeback. Not long ago, Samsung Electronics was in the doldrums. In 2024, the South Korean giant apologized for failing to maintain technological competitiveness and falling short of the market's expectations. It has no need for contrition these days. This month, its market value, which has soared by 400% in the past year, hit $1 trillion for the first time, propelled by furious spending on artificial intelligence infrastructure. In the first quarter of 2026, its operating profit rose to 57 trillion won. That's $38 billion, more than 8 times as much as a year before. Analysts expect profits to keep rising at a blistering pace, thanks in particular to seemingly insatiable demand for its advanced memory chips. Samsung Electronics manages a wide portfolio of products, making everything from fridges to phones. Increasingly, however, its business centers on chip making. Semiconductors accounted for 61% of sales and 94% of operating profits in the first quarter. It is one of just 3 firms capable of making at scale the memory chips needed for AI. Alongside SK Hynix, a South Korean rival, and Micron, an American one. The number of memory chips Samsung sold in the first quarter was up by 20% on the preceding 3 months, but the average selling price rose by 90%. The firm boasts that memory-starved buyers are approaching them to demand long-term purchase agreements. It foresees the shortage lasting well into next year. Samsung is expanding capacity, but relatively slowly. A new facility will start mass-producing chips for sale later this year, and the firm will begin building another, which will cost it some $55 billion in July. Yet the factory known as P5 Lab 2 will not be ready until 2030. And although capital expenditure is set to rise by 55% this year, according to Daniel Kim of Macquarie, a bank, it is falling as a share of revenue. Samsung's management, perhaps unsurprisingly, continues to display caution. Chip-making factories are normally expensive and take years to complete, resulting in a historic cycle of booms and busts. The company will not want to repeat a repeat of the last flash memory boom-bust cycle, when it overbuilt capacity as demand surged and then saw its operating profit fall by half in 2019, notes Jukan Cho of Citrini Research, a firm of analysts. Meanwhile, Samsung is also expanding its foundry business, which manufactures chips designed by others. A new fab in Texas, catering to American customers, will open this year. The loss-making division has long trailed TSMC, the Taiwanese industry leader, and suffered in recent years from complaints of inconsistent execution. A larger customer base has allowed TSMC to gain scale and know-how, creating a self-reinforcing advantage. But the AI boom is aiding Samsung's foundry efforts in two ways. First, is that TSMC is booked to the brim. That has already pushed some customers towards Samsung, including Tesla, a car maker, and Qualcomm, a chip designer. Second, is that fat profits from the memory business mean the company has more cash to invest. Yet the success of the memory division has created other problems. Soaring prices have damaged Samsung's once thriving consumer electronics business. Margins are being squeezed in the smartphone division. It may post a loss this year. Political trouble is also brewing. On May 11th, Kim Yong-byeom, an advisor to Lee Jae-myung, South Korea's president, proposed a national dividend to redistribute chip-making profits to citizens. Mr. Lee has since said only excess tax revenue from the chip boom is being considered, not a new tax. A coalition of Samsung unions is also demanding that 15% of the memory division's profits be distributed to workers, similar to an arrangement already in place at SK Hynix. They are threatening a multi-week strike beginning on May 21st, which would cost Samsung some 30 trillion won. Ironically, union members also lambasted Samsung for failing to capitalize on the AI boom during a strike in 2024. The problem of success may feel like a welcome change for Samsung's bosses, but they are problems nonetheless. The business section continues on page 64. Chip making, flush with cash. Tokyo. The strange Japanese companies minting money from AI. Ajinomoto has spent well over a century supplying monosodium glutamate, MSG, a chemical that gives food an umami kick. Now, another of the Japanese seasoning giant's products is whetting investors' appetites. Ajinomoto Build-Up Film, ABF, is a material used to insulate artificial intelligence processors from circuit boards. It was originally made from byproducts of MSG manufacturing. Ajinomoto controls more than 95% of the market. Booming demand for AI chips has made the film scarce, pushing Ajinomoto's share price up by 65% since the start of the year, around three times the gain in Japan's benchmark Nikkei index. Toto, another century-old Japanese firm, has lately enjoyed an equally improbable flush of prosperity. Best known as the world's largest toilet maker, it has found a profitable seat in the semiconductor supply chain. The firm is a leading producer of electrostatic chucks, ceramic plates that hold silicon wafers firmly in place while memory chips are etched. Toto's operating profit from advanced ceramics now accounts for more than half its total. The AI frenzy has produced obvious winners in semiconductors: American chip designers, South Korean memory makers, Taiwanese foundries. Japan has its equivalents with giants such as Tokyo Electron and Advantest that make the sophisticated equipment used to fabricate and test chips. But like Ajinomoto and Toto, many of the country's AI winners are in less flashy trades. Hoya, a healthcare company that makes spectacles and contact lenses, is a leading supplier of photomask blanks, transparent plates coated with light-sensitive material that lithography tools use to etch chip designs onto silicon wafers. Sakura, a stationery brand, has adapted technology once used for colored pencils to spot defects in chip manufacturing processes. Nitto Boseki, or Nitobo, which began life as a textile company in 1923, is today the sole supplier of tea glass, an ultra-thin glass fiber essential for the packaging AI chips. Two factors explain this eclectic industrial cast. The first is history. In the 1980s, Japan was a semiconductor superpower, accounting for more than half of the global chip production. Six of the world's 10 biggest chip firms in 1989 were Japanese. Those champions created demand for local suppliers of all sorts. The country's firms still dominate several niches in the supply chain, particularly for materials and tools. The second factor is culture. David Day of Bernstein, a broker, argues that Japanese companies keep developing technology even when demand is not yet obvious and rarely abandon it. This lets them deepen their knowledge over decades. When the opportunity finally appears, they are ready, armed with better technology and more credibility than new arrivals. Ajinomoto began work on ABF in the 1970s as it looked for ways to apply the chemistry behind MSG elsewhere. Only in 1999 was the material first adopted by a major chip maker. Yet this zen-like patience has a drawback. When demand spikes, Japanese suppliers can be maddeningly slow to respond. Ajinomoto, Nitobo, and Toto all have plans to expand capacity for their chip-related products, but their responses look distinctly unhurried when compared with the breakneck advances in AI. Foreign tech giants, hoping for a newfound hunger, are, however, are bound for disappointment. The business section continues on page 64. The immigration business, Ice Age, Phoenix. Companies are making big bucks from immigration crackdowns. The exhibition hall of the annual Border Security Expo, BSE, held this month in Phoenix, Arizona, looked more like the set of a dystopian science fiction film. Surveillance towers flashed brightly. Drones buzzed overhead. One company demonstrated a robotic dog designed to patrol borders. Another showed off a thermal camera that can detect movement kilometers away. On stage, Tom Homan, President Donald Trump's border czar, praised the technology firms in attendance for helping to build the most secure border in history. As the bustling trade fair demonstrated, the business of immigration enforcement is booming. Right-wing populists and incumbents seeking to fend them off are spending more on monitoring borders, tracking down those who have entered the country illegally, than detaining and deporting them. In America, Congress has approved roughly $170 billion in cumulative additional funding for immigration enforcement until 2029. Even the European Union is ratcheting up spending. That is benefiting not only incumbent outsourcers, but also a wave of startups hoping to bring new technologies to the industry. Border control is an area of particular interest for newcomers. Much of that business has tended to flow to large defense contractors and established security firms. Yet agencies across America and Europe have been simplifying procurement rules and running pilot programs to allow new products to be tested and deployed more quickly, luring in startups. As a result, what was once a labor-intensive system of patrol agents, radios, and vehicles is turning into a digital surveillance network. Governments increasingly rely on drones, radars, heat-detecting cameras, and the like to monitor vast swaths of territory in real time. Such technologies reduce risks for agents and free them up for higher-value work, according to Stephen Willoughby, an official at the America's Department of Homeland Security. Instead of relying on agents scouring remote terrain, authorities can now monitor deserts and coastlines from centralized command centers. Much of the new tech being used at borders was originally developed for warfare. Anduril, a drone maker that recently raised $5 billion at a $61 billion valuation, has a $363 million contract with the U.S. Border Patrol for automizing surveillance systems. Shield AI, a rival, has won a $198 million contract with the U.S. Coast Guard and is also deploying its drones on European borders. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, the controversial agency that tracks down illegal immigrants, already in America, has become to rely on software provided by Palantir, a data and analytics firm embedded in the Pentagon. The business of housing detained immigrants has drawn less interest from Silicon Valley, but is booming nonetheless. Already, ICE has increased detention capacity to around 70,000 beds, up from roughly 40,000 before Mr. Trump returned to office last year, and is aiming for 100,000. That has been good for prison operators, such as Core Civic and Geo Group, which runs detention facilities. Core Civic net profit in the first quarter of 2026 was up by half from a year before. For Geo Group, it doubled. Deportation has become a lucrative industry. March set a monthly record for ICE of nearly 1,800 deportation flights. Airlines such as Global X are profiting handsomely. The carrier, which has been making losses until recently, saw its sales rise by 15% year-on-year in the first quarter, thanks largely to deportation flights. Most in the industry expect the boom to continue. Looking soft on immigration has proved time and again to be a vote loser. Politicians will be reluctant to tighten the purse strings. Letters, page 15. Iran's logistical reality. No Way Out, May 9th. An article about Iran and the American blockade asserted that Iran's commerce with China is being rerouted by land. It reported that Pakistan has opened 6 new border crossings, presumably with Iran. And it also mentioned that traders are speaking of the Pakistani port of Gwadar becoming an alternative to the United Arab Emirates' vast port at Jebel Ali. I would ask you to look at the map and stop quoting anonymous traders. There are 2 double-lane roads connecting Iran and Pakistan. They can open all the crossings they want, but those are the roads available. Gwadar handled 8,300 TEUs, the standard shipping measure in 2025, which means it can't compete with the port of Karachi, let alone Jebel Ali, which handled 16.5 million TEUs in 2025. Gwadar can service only 2 or 3 vessels at a time. The idea that Gwadar will ever replace Karachi, let alone Jebel Ali, in our lifetime, does not bear scrutiny, nor does the notion that Chinese-Iranian commerce at any meaningful level can traverse through some of the most desolate deserts and the highest peaks on the planet for thousands and thousands of miles. That includes going through Balochistan, which Pakistan does not keep secure by its own admission. And you throw it moving petroleum by train from Iran to China? At what magnitude? As I say, please look at a map. David Hale, former American Undersecretary of State, Washington, D.C. Tackling anti-Semitism. It is true that anti-Semitism caricatures Jews as catch-all avatars for disorienting change. High time to speak up, May 9th. Anti-Semitism is a mirror, not a window. Look into it and you see nothing about Jewish people and much about anxieties and prejudices of the anti-Semite. And, like so many other prejudices, it does not depend on presence of Jews, nor, as your leader notes, does it end with them. All the more reason for non-Jews like me to say plainly and as often as necessary that a society cannot be free or flourish when our Jewish neighbors live in fear, and to stand up for their innate human dignity. You are skeptical of speech bans, such as prohibitions on some of the slogans chanted at pro-Palestinian marches. This is not a matter of philosophy. The world needs practical answers, reasonable, proportionate limits on hate speech set by democratically elected governments are possible and widespread in free societies. No law has ever abolished hatred, but law shapes behavior and signals what a society will and will not tolerate. Without such limits, the loudest and most hateful voices set the terms, and that is no freedom worth the name. Alexander McPherson, Toronto. Cancer research. The promise of epigenetic medicine, exercise, and an epigenome, May 2nd, is nowhere more desperately needed than in pediatric oncology. Adult cancers are overwhelming diseases of genetic wear and tear, the result of a lifetime of accumulated mutations to the DNA sequence itself. Pediatric cancers, by contrast, are remarkably quiet on the genetic front. Instead, they are frequently profound epigenetic crises, developmental software bugs, where the wrong epigenetic tags leave embryonic growth signals permanently switched on. By applying the blunt instruments of adult oncology, therapies are designed to indiscriminately eradicate mutated cells. To pediatric patients, we are in effect trying to fix a software glitch by smashing the hard drive with a hammer. This misunderstanding of the disease's architecture helps explain why survival rates for several brutal childhood cancers have stalled, and why those who do survive are left with the lifelong collateral damage of highly toxic treatments. It is time we stopped trying to beat children's tumors into submission and start learning how to reason with them instead. Dr. Jacques Conwell, Cambridge, Cambridgeshire. Murine memorials. The statue in Cambodia honoring a mine-detecting rat is not the only tribute in the world to a life-saving rodent. Putting the rat in commemoration, April 11th. In Novosibirsk, Russia, stands the monument to the laboratory mouse. The laboratory mouse has helped save and improve more lives than we will ever know. What I find particularly inspiring about this little creature is that it has done this without any fanfare or much acknowledgement. I keep a 3D printed replica of the monument on my desk. Sid Efremovich, Chief Executive, Regeneration Group, Millburn, New Jersey.